Hello, and welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Today you will hear my conversation with Hope and Rachel, the couple who front the Melbourne-based alternative rock band, This Empty City. We chat all about their early days in the Melbourne Riot Girl scene back in the 90s, what has and hasn't changed over the many years since they got their start as musicians, and so much more. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode. We can start with some pleasantries. It's nice to e-meet you guys, for starters.
You too. I'm Hope, and this is Rachel, by the way. Commonly known as Hope and Rachel, but we are two separate people.
You're not one conjoined person?
It feels like an
unconjoined.
Yes.
Contrary to popular belief, yeah.
And I guess to start out, we can start with some little icebreakers as well. What was the last concert that each of you went to?
That's a great question.
No, it was just before we went to Uluru. It was, oh God, what's her name?
Odette.
Odette.
Yes.
An Australian artist, yeah, playing locally. Yeah. That was it, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. That was the last show we went to, yeah.
But we haven't been to as many in the past couple of years, have we, really?
No. I mean, Melbourne had a lot of lockdowns, so.
Yeah. But also, because we're older, honestly, because we're older, we're much more rubbish at going to gigs. And then you go to a gig and you're like, oh, gigs are so great. We should go to more gigs.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I hear you. And what time is it currently?
It is 9 a.m., just after 9 a.m. in Melbourne, so nice and early in the morning.
Nice. It is currently 6 p.m. Eastern time here in the U.S. I'm on the East Coast, so very different time zones, but I'm glad that it's not 6 a.m. where you are, because I'm so used to the 12-hour time difference.
Yeah.
It's a rubbish day too.
Yeah.
It's a classic Melbourne day. Yesterday was a beautiful sunny 26 degree day. I don't know what that is in your temperatures, but it was hot. And then today it's raining and it's grey. That's just typical Melbourne weather.
And where was the Odette show, by the way? What was the venue?
The Northcote Social Club. It's just like a little kind of, like, it's probably 200-300 people fit in there. It's just a nice room, a good little venue. I think the interesting thing about, like, being in Melbourne is so many people, like, there's not a lot of those mid-size kind of venues. Like, you're either playing in those smaller venues or those really big venues. Like, one of the shows that I missed out on that it's always going to haunt me is Phoebe Bridgers was due to come to Melbourne at the start of 2020 and was cancelled. And then when she came back, probably about a year ago, she played like a really big venue. And yeah, it's those sort of middle-sized shows that you often miss out on. But yeah.
Where was she going to play in 2020? Was it a small one?
I think it was the Forum. I mean, not small, but still an intimate venue. Better. And then she ended up playing, I think, Margaret Court Arena.
Okay. Which is massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you get to so many good shows being in New York.
Yeah. Phoebe Bridgers, I believe, used to play bass in Sloppy Jane, Haley Dahl's band. And I actually, funny connection I have is I worked at a venue called the Broadway in Bushwick when I did production there. One of the bartenders there is actually dating Sloppy Jane's violinist.
Oh, now we've got some connections. Now there's a whole graph going on here. Yeah. That's awesome.
But yeah, like I feel like it's insane to see like how stratospherically massive that like Phoebe and even just like Boy Genius now too. Like that was a side project and now they're like touring arenas and like playing with Hozier and Taylor Swift. That's insane.
And that's the devastating thing about being so far away is like, you know, when you sort of see them start and they've got the, you know, music released, I guess in the States you can go to those smaller shows. Whereas here, like we're waiting for them to come out. Will they tour Australia? I don't know. But yeah, wow. I think that would be an awesome show to see.
Yes.
They're so good.
Yes. Amazing.
Yeah.
So now I guess would be a good time to get a little bit into the band. Would you tell me a little bit about the current project that you guys have, This Empty City, and how it came about?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's an interesting one. We had some friends over in the backyard and met this guy for the first time and just started talking about music and bands that we'd been in the past. And he played us some tunes. And then I don't know how it happened that He sent us some tunes. Do you remember?
I think I said, if you ever write any songs and you need some vocalists, you can send it to us and we'll have a go. And he was pretty jazzed. And so during lockdown, we started making music with our old bass player. And I said to this person's partner, who is a colleague of mine, oh, you can get your partner to send music to us. Like, gave her a bit of a reminder. And so he did. He just sent through a couple of bits of music and then we just kind of went back and forth from there. Yeah.
And we've only met him like face-to-face once.
Yeah.
But, yeah, which is kind of the cool thing about how easy it is now to actually make music with people. Like it doesn't feel like the slog that it was 25 years ago.
It's so different in many ways, though, because there's pros and cons, I guess, with everything, but because we haven't made music in a really long time. And when we were in our past band, you'd get together, you'd jam every week, you'd write songs together in that organic sort of way. It would sort of happen quite naturally. Even though it is easier in a lot of ways now, it is also kind of sad that we've only met him once. We're not really like a proper band in that way, like, because it's just it's a completely different experience.
Yeah, I bet. It's like crazy now you can just pass around some files online and then you can just sort of fool around on Logic Pro and then you can make a song and upload it and submit it to streaming, which is independently, which is insane. Like if you had thought that could ever be a possibility, like 30 years ago, it's crazy.
Yeah. It's wild. And that you just like can get the skills and Google how to do it. Like I am terrible with technology, but yeah, when we went into that lockdown, I was like, well, I guess I'll just get a few bits and pieces and try and make it work. And that we got to the level where we could actually record it all, and send the files across was pretty cool.
That has been really lovely though, actually. Like I guess because we hadn't made music in a long time, probably the last time was about 10 years ago when we made a couple of short films and so we did the music for that, which was a different experience again. But I guess doing music this time around, it's a really nice experience to be able to really take your time and think about what you want to do. And my favorite thing is I love to do a backing vocal and can do like a begillion and no one's hassling me to hurry up or it's the best. I can really go to town on those backing vocals. It's a really different experience this time around. Good in some ways.
Definitely. And I would love to know a little more about your background in the local music scene and how it was organizing these shows at a time when there were seemingly not like enough quote unquote like queer-friendly music scenes. I mean, I'm sure there were plenty of pockets all over the place and all over the world, but they were like so siloed and there was no internet to connect them together. So yeah. What was it sort of like? You want to tell me a little bit about that background?
Yeah, for sure. So I started in bands when I was 17, and I was just really lucky that I joined a band at a time where there was the riot girl scene, obviously, in the US. And in Melbourne, we had a scene called the Grot Girl scene, which was like a zine, and you know, they organized gigs, and there was a bunch of bands in that scene. And it was just such a queer-friendly scene, you know, female scene. And I was just really lucky that that was kind of my first experience in bands, and I guess kind of spoiled in a way that I just kind of thought that that was always going to be around, that, you know, that these scenes had always existed because they were my first experiences, that, you know, in a, it was kind of hardcore grunge band, I guess, at that time that I was in, that people wanted to hear and what we had to say, and that, you know, your voices would be heard. And I think later when, you know, I joined different bands and was not sort of that, and that scene sort of, you know, died out, I guess, a few years later, when we found it was kind of quite interesting being trying to find slots, whereas it kind of felt like, I guess, those few years later, that it wasn't, if there was one sort of band that had a female lead in the lineup, it was like, oh, we've got kind of the female lead rock band in this lineup. It just didn't, it felt much harder.
Yeah. Even when we'd get interviewed at that time, it would always, they'd always ask what it was like to have so many females in the band. The start, it was just Hope and I. And that was it. But we always got asked about that because it was such a novel thing to have females. It was a really male dominated scene pretty much the whole time we played together in bands. Mm.
And then I think in terms of like, there wasn't a lot of, like, there was kind of maybe one night at that time, it was called Q&A, Queer and Alternative. And I think it was like a Thursday night.
It was.
So there was like one night across Melbourne that was known as like that night that you could go to, but there was no live rock show. So we're like, let's start, you know, a night that we called the Homo Rock Show. And it's just so amazing how it's like, if you build it, they will come. Like we convinced a few bands to join us and put on the show. And I think, you know, they just always sold out. And it was like, you know, there was the want for people to come out to these shows, but just something didn't exist. So by creating it, you know, we created, I guess, a bit of a platform for ourselves as well as other bands that were similar to us.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Like the local, like grassroots DIY aspect of the whole movement is part of what made it great, for sure. And I think that's so funny that, I don't know, like you said about interviewers sort of honing in on the female-led aspect of things when, I don't know, I don't find it surprising. I mean, we're living on this planet, good God. But like, it's also just funny. It's so funny. Like, women make up like 51% of the population and have been doing and making stuff forever, like since like centuries and centuries before we even were born.
Yeah.
And yet it's still like novelty. Oh my God, woman. Like, can you believe it? Yeah.
Well, we did it like a trivia question the other day, and it was like, who were the only two women to win Best Rock Album or something? Yeah. It was like Sheryl Crow and Alanis Morissette, and I was like, surely there's been more. Surely.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't actually do the research into it, but I mean, we believe the trivia question, but that would seem wild. You know, there's been so many great bands and women in rock bands, but it's interesting.
I mean, it's really changed now. Even when you hear the radio now, like our local radio, is there's just so many female rock artists or female artists in general, but certainly a lot more. It's certainly a lot more even, and again, even getting play, like radio play and all those sort of things, it just was really hard because I like to think it was because we're female and not because we weren't that good.
It could be either. We never know.
It could be either. But it certainly played into it. And as you say, a lot of the lineups, like we wouldn't be able to get a gig because they'd say, oh, we've already got a female in the lineup. So We certainly couldn't have two. I mean, that would make it a little crazy. Yeah, so it's good to see how much it's changed in so many ways for women. Mm. And yeah, it's obviously a really great thing because we've got amazing things to say.
Yes. And very necessary things to say.
Mm. Definitely.
And like you said about how it's like very different now, I feel like what's really cool about where I'm living, like at least in the local aspect, I can't really speak to the A-list celebrity aspect of everything, but like in the local scene, there was a friend of mine who organized a show that he got in a lot of hot water for because it was all cis white men on the bill. And yeah, he actually got in big trouble. And I thought that that's kind of cool that people are like, yeah, on the local level, at least holding people in the scene accountable for those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And so to go back a little further, how did the two of you first meet?
Great question. So at university, I went to university and met Rachel's best friend from high school, and she was my best friend at university. So I was like, I've got to meet your high school best friend. And yeah, that's how we met.
I think the very first time, yeah, it was the very first time we met. Hope was doing a gig in her first band, Dole Juice, and it was a very heavy band, which I was not used to at the time. There was a lot of screaming going on, and that was certainly not my thing at the time, and I was quite terrified. They were very popular, that band. You know, they were very well loved, but certainly wasn't my thing, and so I was a little terrified of Hope the first time I met her because she seemed very angry on stage, but a delight off stage. And so we've actually known each other for, well, we got together not that long after, probably a year after or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we've been together 28 years, actually. Yeah. So we started, yeah, we just got hung out a little bit at uni and stuff, and then started bands together and continued bands together.
Yeah.
Continued making music together. Yeah.
That's cool. What has the trajectory of each of your projects look like? Have you gone like through phases of like sounding like this kind of vibe and then sounding like a completely different vibe throughout the years?
100%, 100%. And I think like in that first band, like I'm probably tone deaf is the best way to describe it. So the screaming was helpful because I wasn't a very good singer. And then I was in that band when someone introduced me to the album Little Earthquakes by Tori Amos. And I was like, oh my gosh, and absolutely fell in love with that album. Thought it was so good and wanted to do something different. And Rachel was an amazing singer and could play guitar and could actually had some skills. So, you know, I was like, oh, if I could join a band with her, maybe I can actually learn some of the craft. So then the band that we started then was called Julianne's House, and it was
which is where we met.
Yeah. And it was like, I don't know, I want to say medieval folk. Like we had a flute. I don't know how I got from Tori Amos to medieval folk, but somehow like someone played the flute. I was like, you're in. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the best way to describe it. We had a rain stick. Have you ever heard of that? You have. Okay.
Yeah.
We had a rain stick that made its way to every single gig. all the bells and whistles. I think we had some sort of crazy drum that was like, it wasn't like an
Irish kind of
an Irish sort of drum or something. Yeah. We tried to use different sort of instruments, and it was very vocally heavy straight away because our voices work really well together. They're really quite different. I've got more of a high sort of, I guess, pretty sort of voice, and Hope's got a really deep, soulful, like emotive sort of voice. And so they work really well together, which we figured out straight away. And yeah, so that, even though the sound has changed significantly over the years, it gradually got a bit heavier and more rock sort of focused. What has always stayed the same is our vocal interplay. Yeah, that's always been sort of the driving force of each band, I want to say. Does that sound mean? I mean,
I don't know if other people would agree. But
I don't
sure.
know that other people would agree.
You can always speak for yourself.
I can.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm also curious to ask, like, since you've been together for 28 years, do you feel like you at some point reached a stage where you are able to just like almost telecommunicate via like songwriting or like studio time and stuff like that without even having to say like what you're thinking or feeling?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because like what we'll often do is like we'll do separate parts, but we won't always listen to each other's parts because once you hear something, it's so hard to think of something totally new. So we'll often just lay down separate parts. And so often when we unmute each other's parts and listen, they go together and we're singing in different spots. So often we actually don't have to change anything because they just work, which is strange. And I think the same often with lyrics, because we will, once we've sort of got a bit of the melody down, we'll just write the lyrics together. And we're talking about one of the songs, Just Enough. And I was like, oh, and Rachel was like, what's that lyric about? And I was like, oh, I don't think I wrote that. I don't know what it's about. And she's like, I don't think I wrote that. I was like, one of us had to have written it. Like it was definitely one of us, but yeah. So it's really interesting in that way, how it's kind of, yeah, come together. It's good because she still tells me when I'm singing pitchy. Yeah. Yeah. But I still haven't quite got that down to be able to always tell, but she's always got it.
Yeah, it amazes me because Hope's got an amazing voice. It amazes me that she really can't hear sometimes if anyone, like including herself, but anyone else is singing in tune or out of tune. Like it's amazing. But yet she can like sing in tune most of the time.
And once I've learnt it, it's more like learning it by singing it over and over.
Yeah.
Like, and once I've learnt it, I'm usually okay. That's the beauty of the live show, though. Who knows?
Yeah. That's funny. And I feel like that's a really good balance. Like, you're like the more technical side of sort of embracing the artfulness of everything. And then Hope, you're like the more sort of freewheeling, like just like free spirited side. And like those like two energies like go really well together.
Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah.
Weirdly, we're probably opposite personality-wise.
And I think it's so often, it's like afterwards, I'll know what it's about. But at the time, I'm not thinking about what it's about. You're just kind of feeling it and seeing it. And you're not, there's no sort of thought about I never sit and go, I'm going to write about this or what am I going to write about? You know, we just listen to the music and then start singing. And I find it really hard to come up with a melody if I'm not singing lyrics. So I'll always just sing something. And yeah, it's so often that afterwards you'll be able to kind of piece it together and go, oh, that's what that's about.
I agree. I usually come up with a melody and the lyrics come later for me. And I write a little bit differently, whereas I feel like I need to be writing about something. I need to sort of be overcome with emotion in some way to be able to find lyrics. But I agree that sometimes I write them and I don't kind of know what they mean. And then I look back, even songs years later, I'll look back and go, oh, I reckon that's what that was about. Yeah, it's quite interesting. It's interesting how that all works and how it can make so much sense. And also it feels, yeah, like sometimes it does come from another place because you think, how did I come up with that? Or how did we come up with that? Like a really great lyric and you go, oh, well done us. But it kind of feels like it wasn't us at the same time.
Yeah, that's really funny. I also would love to know what, for each of you, what the last piece of music that made you cry was.
Ooh,
God,
this is good.
That happens to me.
Yeah, this is going to be rare for me, but Rachel is a big crier.
Well, the last one, though, I reckon it was on the Boy Genius album, though, and I can't think of, I'm terrible with the names of songs as well. Oh, what's someone? Oh, I won't remember the name of it. It definitely made me cry. And it's the three of them singing.
Cool Girl? I think that might be the song that you're talking about.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It definitely made me cry.
Yeah. And to me, it's probably an Australian artist called Angie McMahon and If You Call. Such a good song. Oh my and God, just amazing. Her voice is so good. Like, it's one of those voices that you like, you would recognize it, you know. You don't have to know it's her to go, yeah, that's her. And yeah, that's a just every, you just feel it in the voice.
You do.
So good. Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Her voice is so, have you heard of her before? Have you come across her before?
I don't think I have. I'm looking her up right now.
Yeah. Her voice just seems to convey so much emotion, you know, and I reckon you can do that too, Hope. Now, not many artists, like, you might have an amazing voice, but conveying that emotion, that raw emotion, I don't know, like, there's not that many people that can do that, I reckon. She's one of them, obviously. Yeah.
That's really cool. I'm actually looking at her affinity artists, and Odette is there.
So, yeah, Odette's awesome too, yeah.
There we go.
Voting the Aussies.
That's it. That's it.
So something that I also love asking people is when you write something and then it's finally out, do you ever miss that sacred period where the song was only yours?
No, definitely not. No. I am so excited to get it out there. Just so, I don't know, not even for a really like large audience. I just love making something and being able to hear it, like even myself, or being able to show people who are dear to me, like, you know, look what we did. This is like when you're really proud of it and it's, yeah.
Mm, yeah.
I just want it out there straight away.
Mm. And I think that's kind of the coolest thing for me is if it actually means something to someone else. Like the, you know, very few times when, you know, someone might have come up to me that I didn't know that's, you know, I remember that there was one time when I was on the street in Brunswick Street in Melbourne, which is and someone came up to me and said it that, and that time was a cassette they had of one of my bands and that they'd played it. When they're having a tough time and they're overseas or whatever. And it's just like so cool to think that it means something to someone else. It doesn't, it, you know, it's not just you enjoy it yourself. So yeah. Yeah. I always like that bit the best.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite memorable live experiences, live music experiences you've had?
Oh, Laura Mvula.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. She was incredible. Yeah, she's definitely up there for me.
For me, Tori Amos, again, that, as I said, that album, you know, changed like how I thought of music. It was so amazing. And then seeing her live, and I think at one point I went to a show and we're probably in the third row and like we're so close that you could see that it was more important to her to sing than to worry about dribbling and that she'd like kind of dribble and then, you know, wipe the dribble away at the end of the song. And I was like, it was so cool to see someone who cared way more about the way they sounded than the way they looked. And yeah, and I think every time I've seen her, I've just been so impressed by how much she cares about the songs and the music and you know, getting it right. Yeah, that was amazing. So many.
Katie Noonan, another Australian artist.
Yeah.
Her voice live. And we saw her in early iterations of George, the first band she was in, when she'd play locally. And it's when you hear one of those voices that sort of takes you to another place where it's just so, her voice is really pure and just incredible to hear live. And she's a solo artist now, but hearing her live, even when I may not even like the songs that she sings necessarily, hearing her voice is just incredible. She's just another one of those artists. Yeah.
And I think the other one for me is when I saw Babes in Toyland, this would have been like 90, maybe 93, 94.
Oh, I was just going to say, did you see them recently? Are they touring again?
That was many years ago. But like, that was kind of the first time I'd seen that kind of band to a packed, it was a smallish room, but it was pretty packed. And just seeing them just absolutely, you know, like it was just such an intense kind of experience. Yeah. And that was like, I think I'd probably just watch the show like with my eyes so wide open going, oh my God, I can't believe what I'm seeing here. Yeah.
Oh God, there's so many. And then Feist.
Oh yeah. She was great.
She was amazing. I don't know. So many great gigs. Oh, it's hard to even think of them. Gosh, anyway.
Yeah. I feel like, oh, I have to ask, was there moshing at the Babes in Toyland show?
I feel like there would have been, but honestly, the way I remember it was like me standing sort of close to the stage, but literally just like so mesmerized by the band that almost like nothing, like everything was silent but the music, you know what I mean? That's how I remember it. And I think I had seen Nirvana a few years earlier and I had loved Nirvana and, to be honest, had seen them live and been kind of disappointed in the show, in that like I was just like, to me it didn't, I think at that point they were probably over touring and it was, you know, it didn't have the energy that I thought that I heard in the music, whereas I think that was the difference when I saw Babes in Toyland. I guess they obviously didn't have the hype around them and all of that sort of, you know, that pressure. And it was the first show where I'd really felt the intensity of the music live.
Yeah, that's always, that's an indescribable feeling for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a local band here in New York called Big Girl, who I've seen a few times, and they are like, the best way I can describe them was like if Slater Kinney and Deerhoof gave birth to a bunch of insane, unhinged Catholic schoolgirl choir. That's just like it's the most unforgettable live experience because like they're very theatrical too. There's choreography. There are points where Caitlin, the lead singer, will be just like doing a back bend on the floor, and just that's why I love local music scenes, is because like the creativity is so uninhibited and like uncontained. And it's like, it's so cool, and it's so much fun.
And I think that's the thing with like the smaller shows and the small, it feels like they're playing always because they want to and not because they have an obligation to, or you know, it feels like they're rocking up and playing because that is what they really want to do. And I think that's, yeah, we've often talked about, like, you know, I think when we were younger, we were like, this is what, you know, this is what we want to do. We want to be able to make money from music. And I think, you know, now that you can kind of look back at it, you're like, well, I think by not having any pressure on it, it is so much more freeing. You know, in a way, in that you can, you know, there's no obligation to make it. You just make what you want when you want, and there's no pressure on it.
Exactly how you want it to sound.
Yeah.
There's no one telling you what you should do or how you should play. And there is, something quite amazing about that. And I actually think we're quite lucky in a lot of ways that nothing happened weirdly at the time. I can't believe I would not believe that I was saying that now, my future self, because I wanted it so badly, because I thought, imagine being able to tour and play music all the time. But yeah, I think you have a really simplistic way to view it when you're young and you don't kind of get the reality of it all. Yeah, it's lucky that we got to do that the way we did. And again, the major change between now, doing music now and then, is that you had to gig all the time. You had to just play constantly to get people to even listen to you. And that was a really, really great experience. I'm so glad we had that. It was so fun to play live gigs.
Yeah.
Sorry, our cat is...
I mean, it's...
Don't apologize for cat. What's a cat's name?
Olive. We've got Olive and Pippi. We've got two cats. I mean, you know, I'm pushing for more, but Rachel's like... But yeah, I think you're right. It's like there's no, like, it was great having to do gigs because you did a lot of gigs.
Loved,
but
it
also was quite limiting in how you could get a new audience. You know, no one was like, if we're talking to someone in New York, there would have been no way for them to get our music unless they had ordered it through a record store and waited for months. And, you know, so yeah, I think that's the great thing about now is it is so much easier to get your music out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me for such a fun chat.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it. The thunder's rolling in too now,
yeah,
by the way.
It's like, all happening.
Yeah. No, it's been wonderful. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy, and thank you again to Hope and Rachel of This Empty City for joining me today. Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy.